Welcome to IBBA Insights, providing expert advice on buying or selling small businesses. IBBA Insights is presented by the International Business Brokers Association, the world's largest nonprofit organization for those helping others sell or buy businesses. Now, here's your host, Chris Diglio.
Welcome to IBBA Insights, the official podcast of the IBBA. Today we have an action-packed show for you, so I'm going to jump right into it. We usually go through a little bit of introduction and talk about the things that the show covers, but I want to make sure we are able to get through all the information we have today. Today's guest is Steve Zimmerman. He's the founder, principal broker, and chief executive officer of Restaurant Realty Company. He's personally sold or leased over 1,000 restaurant, bars, or club businesses. He sold many commercial buildings, worked with over 2,000 clients, and completed over 3,000 restaurant valuations since 1996. You heard that right, over 3,000 restaurant valuations. So we have an expert when it comes to the matter of restaurants. His real estate experience also includes sales, acquisitions, management, and ownership of numerous properties throughout California, including restaurants, hotels, apartment buildings, single-family houses, and an office building, and multi-use retail building. Steve is also the author of A Restaurant Dealmaker, an insider's trade secrets for buying a restaurant, bar, or club. It's available on Amazon. And those of you that that are avid readers or just would like to have a greater insight on dealmaking within the restaurant industry, I highly recommend you reading that book. So Steve has extensive experience as an expert witness and works regularly with many attorneys and the courts regarding valuations, leases, acquisitions, and disposition matters. So as you could tell, when it comes to the restaurant industry, we have the man to talk to. So, Steve, welcome to the show today.
Good morning or good afternoon, your time. Nice to be with you. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, I got to tell you, from California, we spoke the other day on the phone, and you called me, I think, 9 o'clock my time, and my first response to you was, wow, you start pretty early.
Yeah, I'm a firm believer again. Going, I'm an exercise nut, so I get it done early in the morning, and it's done, and on my way. The rest of the day,
good for you. Well, I want to jump right into the restaurant business in a whole. And today's show, it will greatly introduce a lot of information to business owners of restaurants, people maybe looking to buy restaurants, and even brokers out there that have dabbled in selling restaurants. I can't think of one industry, Steve, where there are more opportunities to sell than restaurants. You know, wherever you go, there's a restaurant and many different kinds. So I know the COVID and the pandemic and everything that's happened has greatly affected the restaurant industry. So why don't we start there? What effect has it had on this industry?
Yes. Well, I'm speaking from the perspective of California because that's where I do business throughout the state of California. The shelter in place went into place in California on March 19th. And basically, the only food service operations that were allowed to operate were takeout and delivery. And so there are a number of operators that didn't do takeout delivery previous to the shelter in place, and they decided to do it. In fact, the Golden Gate Restaurant Association, which is an association of about 800 restaurants in the San Francisco Bay Area, they did a survey of about 300 restaurants participated that did delivery and takeout during COVID. The results were that 60% lost money doing takeout delivery, 25% broke even, and 15% said they made money and they probably lied. So the reality is that takeout delivery for those people that tried it, unless their model was, you know, oriented to takeout delivery prior to that. Like, for example, I'm a restaurant landlord and I have a tenant that does pizza, a high quality pizza, and his model was 70% takeout delivery prior to COVID, and he's doing fine. Although I had to give him a rent reduction, but he's still doing probably 80-90% of his volume. But that's unusual. So what the prognosis is generally by the California Restaurant Association, which is a statewide association that many restaurants and drinking establishments belong to, there are approximately 80,000 total food and drinking establishments in California. The California Restaurant Association is suggesting that 30% of those operations will not reopen. In other words, the keys will be turned back to the landlord, and the landlord's going to end up with basically a restaurant or a bar operation, because they just don't have the wherewithal to deal with the distancing requirements and the other COVID requirements with masks and distancing and temperature taking and all the other things that are involved. Because, you know, most of these restaurants, bars, they run to hand and mouth in terms of, you know, day-to-day operations. The margins are small, generally speaking. And so it's a real traumatic situation here in California. I could talk a lot more on this COVID thing, and I will if you want me to. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say that delves pretty deep into it from a California perspective. And here in Florida, although we've reopened, it's still at certain capacities, and it has been more difficult. I mean, one of the questions I was going to ask you, which I thought I might have known the answer to, was how have restaurant owners been able to survive during these times? And the logical answer was, well, they just did takeout, and if they did it right, they would have made money. But it doesn't seem like the statistics you're quoting would back that up. So how have they been able to survive?
Well, some landlords have been, you know, gracious enough to abate rent, forgive rent totally for a period of time. You know, we're in phase two right now of the shelter, which means they're allowing some dine-in situations. It's a county-by-county situation in California. So I'd say about half the counties right now are allowing dine-in with, you know, the spacing requirement and the masking and all the other stuff that they're requiring. And the other half are they're allowing outdoor seating with spacing requirements. But by and large, a lot of them that didn't have landlords that were willing to forgive rent or discount rent, in a lot of cases they've just given back the keys. And as I quoted earlier, you know, the statistic is about 30% of over 20,000. 1,000 food service and drinking establishments are not going to be in business any longer. So it's changed the whole landscape for the buyer of restaurants, and the buyer is now becoming more of a lessee, where he has the ability to basically deal with the landlord directly, basically assume the assets of the facility. The licenses can be purchased either through the former tenant or from the outside, or if the beer and wine, they don't have to buy the license. They basically just get jurisdiction to put a beer and wine license in the place. And they're basically getting access to hundreds of thousands of dollars of built-out assets for no cost, security deposit. And they'll probably negotiate a very compromising rent initially, where, you know, rents can be structured. So I'm seeing them structured so there's free rent, usually for several months. And then it'll either go to a straight percentage rent with no minimum rent for the anticipated time that it'll take for the vaccine to come in place, if it does come in place, because they're going to have these distancing requirements and other onerous requirements, which is going to basically minimize their sales potential. So what's happening is they're getting access to hundreds of thousands of dollars of built out assets. They're getting a very reduced rent. And it won't even go to any semblance of market rent until some point where there's close to a cure of this pandemic. Now, that's not always the case. I mean, there are situations now where I have escrows going where they are just assuming the existing lease, but there's maybe have been a discount on the purchase price. Like I have a deal closing the next couple of days. It's a pizza operation in a grocery store. Well, the grocery store has operated during this pandemic, and it's a shame they didn't get into this pizza operation sooner, because it's actually in the grocery store, and they would have done a great volume, because grocery store businesses have gone up as a result of the pandemic. But anyway, so in this case, he's getting a couple months of free rent, and that's it. Then he goes to the rack rate of is doing an assignment of the existing lease. So it's not always a total modification of the lease. It's a case by case basis. But generally speaking, deals that we had in contract. And by the way, just to give you a broad brush, we were on track, our company, to do close to 100 transactions this year prior to COVID. We had closed approximately 34 deals the first 12 weeks of this year. And we had, and we closed another 10 deals in the shelter in place. And we have another about 45 deals actually going on. But what's happened, that 45 deal number was probably close to 55 or 60 deals. About 15 have gone away totally. A number of them have been renegotiated as far as price, renegotiated as far as the lease with the landlord, either to get some free rent or modified rent, again, through this virus behind us. So there's been a lot of take. I mean, the buyer is in the driver's seat, clearly. And so what's happening now, for example, I was in contract to sell two restaurants side by side in San Francisco, about two blocks from Union Square, which is the heart of the city, the downtown area. Two restaurants doing $2.7 million, had an SDE of around $600. We were in signed both ways for $1.2 million. The buyer, who was always a little bit concerned about the pandemic, because Chinese, in fact, as early as January, he was talking about, oh, I got to slow down this deal because this pandemic is gone in China. And we, our light bulb hadn't really gone off at that point, because this was January. And before we really realized the depth of the problem, it was like February, you know, March. And he was very pessimistic at that point. So bottom line, he blew out of the deal. So I'm talking to the seller and I'm saying, hey, Mr. Seller, you know, you're closed. You've got small little restaurants. Both floor plates are like it's a tavern with a small food service operation, which is maybe 2,000 square feet. The other one is about 1,500 square feet. You're going to wipe out any potential to do sales volume with this distancing requirement. We have to reduce the number of seats by minimally 50%. You're not going to be able to get anywhere near this $1.2 million price. In fact, I don't know what kind of price you can get. So what I would suggest you do is, I know you're motivated to sell. And again, if he has a wife that's very ill, he's in his mid late 60s. He's had it. He had a total of five restaurants. I had sold one for him a couple years ago. He's got these four others remaining. He wants to get rid of them. He's a Persian fellow. His mother's dying in Persia. So for personal reasons, he needs to get out of the business. Fortunately, he made a lot of money over the years, so financially he's okay. So I said, Henry, you know, we can't put a price tag on this business. We just got to put it as negotiable and see what happens. And my thinking is that maybe somebody would pay him half that amount of money if they can see the potential, because they are good locations. They are good long-term leases that have already been negotiated and ready to be put in place for the new buyer. But you know, the price has been reduced by 50% potentially, and I'm not getting that much play. Even marketing, I've been doing change the marketing to negotiable for 3 weeks. I've had a few inquiries, but when they hear the location, oh, that's a prime location in San Francisco. It's San Francisco, and San Francisco, unfortunately, has been a very difficult landscape for the last couple of years, because you know, it's been publicized throughout the press. You know, homeless problems, a lot of drug problems on the streets, homeless problems, convention business is down consequently. There's extraordinary costs for doing business in San Francisco. There's San Francisco Healthy, where you have to pay health benefits, even if the employee works a minimum number of hours. And there's all kinds of onerous taxes in San Francisco, gross receipts taxes, all other kinds of fees and delays for getting permits, et cetera, because there's so much growth going on in the city. So it's a very difficult place to do business the last couple of years. In fact, you know, I was raised in San Francisco, and that's where I started my business brokerage business, where I was doing, in early years, 50% plus of my transactions were in San Francisco. Last year, of the 84 deals we completed, 16 were in San Francisco, and they were small venues, small square footage, owner-operators, smaller rent, where the owner is basically, and his family are basically, you know, offsetting all their outside labor so they can make the numbers work. So,
well, Steve, let me jump back just a little bit then.
Sure. Sure.
I want to talk a little bit more about valuation. I want to talk about the effect of COVID on that, but I want to go back, and we're going through this now. Some areas are still in the thick of it. Some have reopened more than others, but you know, every bad thing we go through in life, there are takeaways or things that we learn or things that we could utilize going forward. So in the restaurant business, was there anything good that has come out of this that will help restaurants prosper in the future, that whether it's operational, whether it's with their menus, or what, is anything they could have learned during this that's going to help them possibly going forward?
Well, you know, I'm a proponent of, you know, making lemons into lemonade, but yet I'm a realist, so you got to balance the two. And the issue here is that there, and again, our sweet spot in our sales activity is basically independent, non-franchised, non-chain operators, and the failure rate is approximately 50% the first 3 years, 80% the first 5 years. So it's a very challenging niche to make it in. And so you're suggesting, well, what's a positive thing? Well, it's sort of a positive negative thing. And that is that there are a lot of people that were running on a shoestring, and basically, you know, it was challenging for them to break even. And what this brought to fruition is the fact that, hey, you know, I've been working my butt off, you know, probably basically barely making minimum wage, and now this has given me a realistic, it's shaken me up and given me a sense of realism that, hey, I'm not going to make it. I can't make it. I couldn't make it before COVID, and for definitely COVID has put me under. So the sweet spot for them is it's definitively told them that this is not the business for them, and they're out of here. Now, I know that's not what you wanted to hear, but that's one part of this whole situation. The other thing that, you know, what we're seeing is that because there are I think what this whole pandemic is creating is that it's knocked out a number of job opportunities. And so people that have not been in the restaurant business before, I see, are knocking on our door, you know, wanting to look at opportunities. And in the past, landlords have taken the position that, hey, I'm not touching anybody unless they've had 3 to 5 years of management experience. They've walked their talk. And in some cases, they want to go see their existing operations to kick the tires and eat the food, see what the deferred maintenance level is, and see what the quality level is of the food. Now they're becoming a little bit more lenient, and which is allowing people that haven't been in the restaurant business before an opportunity to come in the business, because they, as long as they get the proper training from the seller, or they have somebody tied into them that's got skin in the game, that's had operating experience, but not necessarily the primary principal that's coming to deal having primary experience. So it's allowing newbies that haven't had restaurant experience to come in to take an ownership role. And I'm seeing new deals being done, guys from software industry, other industries that, because of this pandemic, they don't have opportunities there anymore. They weren't happy there beforehand. They want to try something different. So it's facilitating landlords being more lenient, allowing people in. And again, my comments are geared to the independent, non-franchise, non-chain operation where the risk factor is much higher. So
sure,
that's sort of a plus. But it's premature at this point because, again, you know, we've only been phase two in California for about 3 weeks. So it's really hard to opine on what, in fact, you know, to answer your question specifically without having more of a track record with the new landscape.
I talked to one restaurant owner this past week, and they told me one of their takeaways that came out of this. Again, they're a non-franchise place, so they can do whatever they want in their restaurant, serve whatever they want, and they can make changes without having to get it approved by corporate. So they said one of the things they did is they reduced their menu and what they're offering on the menu, and they focus more on obviously the most popular dishes they had, but also some of the more profitable dishes they had. So they felt by limiting their menu and bringing it down, it has really helped them out, because with food and their ordering and what to keep on hand and being able to go through things. So they even said that going forward, they'll obviously expand the menu again, but they might not make it as robust or as large as they once did. And they felt like that was something that they're taking away from this coming out of this pandemic.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, it was an interesting point of view. Whether it's going to work or not, I'm not sure, but it's worked for them during what's going on now. So let's talk, because there are people out there that own restaurants and they might have been in the market to sell, and now maybe they're going to be forced into the market to sell. So let's talk about, in the current condition, what's happening with their overall valuations on a restaurant, or even the terms of a restaurant, where maybe in the past they were able to get mostly cash or all cash or SBA financing. Are we seeing more seller financing? Are we even seeing earnouts at this point? What are you seeing?
Okay. Well, first of all, let me respond to earnouts, because we don't do earnouts in the restaurant niche, at least in California, at least in my territory. Or my other fellow business broker, CAB, California Association of Business Broker guys, I don't see earnouts going on in the restaurant business. I have a weekly meeting with my agents and brokers, and I had our leading SBA lender be a guest speaker about 2 weeks ago. And basically what he said was that any deal that was, any business that's been closed during the shelter, they will not do unless they were able to run on a modified basis. Like I have this pizza operation that I have a listing on, and they were able to maintain almost their sales were only off 6% for since the shelter began to date, and their profit is actually up. So in that case, we got to pre-approve for an SBA to do an 80% loan, a 7A loan, and so no problem. That one is clear, and there may be a few others that fall through the hole and that are exceptions to the rule. But generally, those businesses that were closed totally, SBAs, their posture is we need 18 to 24 months of experience post-shelter before we will consider doing an SBA loan. So that's basically virtually wiping out SBA potential. So then
right.
We asked, then what do you suggest? I said, oh, simple. Just have the sellers carry back 80% of the loan and 80% of the sales price until they have that 18 to 20, and then the buyer can come to us after he's had the seasoning of 18 to 24 months and we'll take them out. But again, most sellers, we did very few, pre-COVID, we did very few seller carrybacks because, again, the risk factors being so high, as I've indicated, that the seller's attitude is, hey, I don't want to go jump back in there, take over an asset which has actually become a liability because of, deferred maintenance and accrued, taxes and other things they have to accumulate. In California, there's successorship tax liability for franchise tax board, EDD, and for sales tax. And so if a seller, somebody fails, the buyer's going to have to come in, not only take back a bleeding asset, they're going to have to assume all this successorship tax liability. So it's a real negative. So they just assume the general attitude is, very few seller carrybacks on the restaurant niche, and they'd rather get less of a price and just get all cash and get out. And in most cases, they want the buyer to take on a new lease, not an assignment of the lease. Because in California, any remaining base term plus subsequent options, the assignor or the seller has liability for those. So unless you negotiate a burn off of the liability or, with the landlord, which is tough to do, that's a real concern to the seller. I have a deal right now where I have a seller that's got a very significant net worth, like north of $50 million. It's a small restaurant. Again, this is a classic example of the pandemic. We were in contract pre-COVID. I got the listing about a month before COVID. We listed at $495, which was a deal. It's a closed restaurant with a bar in San Carlos, which is the headquarters for Oracle. It's in the heart of Silicon Valley and, high-end demographics. So it was a closed restaurant. We had a lot of interest, got in the contract immediately for $495. The buyer dropped out during the shelter. The seller said, hey, you know, my concern is I'm not really concerned about the price. I just want to get somebody to take over my liability, my personal liability. And the problem is this is a very sophisticated landlord who I know and dealt with before. He's not going to let him off unless I can find someone equal to or greater net worth. So how am I going to find somebody with $50 million or more? Well, I have found someone, actually, and we're getting into contract, but the price is $225. It was $495 pre-COVID, $225 now. This particular buyer's in the restaurant hotel business, they've got a net worth of about $100 million. So it's not going to be a problem getting the existing buyer off, which is this big thing, because he's got a contingent liability of over $1.5 million on the base term of the lease. And the landlord, the bottom line is the sellers are really taking it in the shorts as far as that those that need to get out today. What I am telling operators, if you have the wherewithal physically and mentally, and you can weather getting through the vaccine period and getting the pandemic behind us, get your business up and running to where it was pre-COVID or better, you're much better off doing that rather than taking in the shorts now and taking minimally a 25 to 50% discount on the price. And those are your alternatives, Mr. Seller. And so, yeah, unfortunately, a lot of people in this niche don't have that choice. They're losing money. A lot, especially the baby boomers, they don't have the mental or the physical ability to cope with the 18 to 24 months of maybe the pandemic will go away. It's a maybe. You know, everybody doesn't really know.
Yeah. Well, if they can afford to hold on, then obviously, yeah, that's the best thing. And you mentioned something earlier about the seller financing. Someone made reference to, oh, someone could put 20% down and you carry 80. Anyone I've ever talked to, if they have to carry that much paper, they just assume being in control of the business. I remember going back to the housing crash 10 plus years ago and coming back into the market when SBA wasn't lending. I would tell the seller of a business, whether it be a restaurant or any business, if you know you're going to have to be the bank. And they said, well, that's a lot of risk. I said, well, you have to be the bank, but in a little bit different. No one's expecting you. I wouldn't expect you to carry 80, 90 percent of the note, because at that point you might as well just run the business yourself, because there's a lot of risk. Too easy for someone to have a bad day and walk away when they are very little invested. I often tell them that, you know, if someone has to come in, they can put 50% down and you can carry the 50%. You're equally at risk, and they're financially committed to trying to make this work. So maybe we'll see a lot more of that in the upcoming years. But I kind of want to transition over to, in normal circumstances, Steve, when business is running right and the economy is better than it is today. I own a business and I'm thinking, well, I might want to sell in a few years. What advice would you have for restaurant owners, you know, how to maximize the value of their business for a future sale? Things they should be doing now and not saying, well, I'm not going to sell, I'll just wait to do that. What should they be doing now and always?
Yeah, good question. I think that, you know, the biggest obstacle for us to get deals done is the lease and the landlord. And landlords in particular in the Bay Area, you know, have a tendency to be very greedy because of the high price of real estate here. And as we all know, the landlord's value of the building is based upon the capitalization of the net operating income. So he's not really receptive, generally speaking, to reduce the rent, because if he reduces the rent, he's going to lower the price of his building, which will affect his ability to refinance it and or the sales price when he sells it. So I think landlords now have a certain amount of vulnerability, because, you know, retail vacancy in San Francisco pre-COVID was pushing 15%. I'd venture to say it's probably going to go to 20-25% post-COVID here. So I think landlords are unless you're dealing with the huge landlords of the world that can sit out and just keep empty spaces and, you know, want to maintain pro forma rent for pre-evaluation purposes. But for the general landlord that doesn't fall into that category, I think they're going to have more empathy and be more realistic. So my advice to operators that can dig in there and continue to operate, now is the time to go and renegotiate your lease with a landlord into favorable, assumable, long-term leases with reduced rents, or maybe, you know, putting a cap on if they're a triple net lease and they're paying real estate taxes, put a cap on the real estate tax on the sale or transfer of the property, which is always a very difficult point to negotiate with the landlord, because again, that affects the value of the building. But that may be some point they can negotiate. They can negotiate better base rent, put a cap on any personal guarantees or burn off of personal guarantees. So generally speaking, I would focus on really hammering on a tactful basis the landlord to say, hey, you know, I'm willing to sit in here and be a tenant, and I'm just trying, as a landlord myself, trying to figure out, you know, how I'm going to deal with my tenant who's going to, you know, basically his lease is up in 3 years. And I'm talking to my partner now, trying to figure out, well, we're just going to lay low now, give a 30% discount for 4 months, and then he's back to his regular rent. But so the landlord is a key thing I would go to. I think also cities are being more lenient in terms of permitting, and areas that weren't disposed to licensing, like an outdoor seating on sidewalk seating, they're more lenient to do that now. So I would try to capitalize on that. And if somebody has the opportunity to put outdoor seating on a sidewalk in front of their restaurant or an adjacent parcel, now's the time to go ahead and negotiate those points with the city, because they're very flexible and amicable to be flexible on changing those things. This is a cute story. I have a lady that has a restaurant. I sold her. I leased it. It was an empty space. And it's right on in Tiburon. Tiburon has a head-on view of San Francisco. And it's right on the water with a head-on view. But it's a very small space. The floor plate is only maybe 1,500 square feet. But she has an outdoor patio, which seats about 30. So she seats inside maybe 30, and then the outdoor patio 30. So she's trying to figure out, you know, how is she going to deal with distancing? I mean, with, you know, getting down to a total customer count of 30 people is not going to be cost effective for her to open up the restaurant and pay her labor and all the other costs she's going to have associated with it. So what can she do? So on her own, immediately next door to her, there is a building, and there's a large deck. The deck is actually on the water, again, with a head-on view of San Francisco. That's three times the size of her deck. And the owner of this building happens to be a nice guy. And so she basically contacted him and said, listen, Alan, how about if you let me cut a hole in between the wall between my deck and your deck? Let me use your deck, and you know, I'll pay you a nominal amount of money for rent, and that would give her the ability to have another 60 seats, even with the distancing requirements. It would still get her 30 seats, so she would have the same number of seats that she had pre-COVID. So this is very creative, and she got ABC jumped right in there and allowed her the permitting necessary to basically to permit that additional deck space. The city expedited her getting the permit to put the hole through the wall and create the extra deck. So, you know, people are really thinking out of the box in some cases on how to survive. And that's something that's very extreme, but I think we're going to see more of these thinking out of the box. And what we're seeing is that bureaucracies are becoming more lenient to work with people. And consequently, I would capitalize that as a long-term operator to jump on that and get as much, you know, bang for your buck with these agencies as far as getting latitude and creating additional space outside the restaurant, adjoining space, dealing with the landlord, getting them into a long-term, more favorable lease situation. And of course, you know, simplifying as Cress has brought up, you know, capitalizing on maybe simplifying the menu, going to items that have better margins for food costs, trying to, you know, maybe make alcohol more prevalent, because obviously the cost of pouring costs on alcohol is usually 10 points lower than food costs, and which you know, flows to the bottom line, et cetera. So being creative in the menu, reducing the menu, maybe more alcohol, capitalizing on dealing with the landlord and bureaucracies, you know, spending the floor plate creatively. Those are some suggestions.
I certainly appreciate that advice. And those of you that have restaurants, own a restaurant, And even those that are looking to buy a restaurant, Steve touched on all the different categories and the areas that could be of concern or could be of help, and what you could do. And also we talked about what you can avoid. Unfortunately, Steve, we've run out of time on today's episode of IBBA Insights, but I wanted to thank you for sharing all of your insights and all the valuable information that I know anyone that was listening that either sells restaurants, buys restaurants, or owns a restaurant in particular can, you know, especially if they own a restaurant, it's going to hit home. And, you know, we'd love to be able to sit here and tell them that everything is going to be great. But as you mentioned, you know, they're in a rough ride right now, and it's buckle up and, you know, and hold on and see ourselves through. But I love the story you told about the cutting of the hole and having the same seating occupancy by adding on the more space. It's amazing when out of necessity and sometimes desperation, the ideas that you're able to come up with and the things that you're able to do. So in closing, I'd like for you, Steve, if you don't mind, to let people know how they can get a copy of your book or how they can contact you or get more information. Sure. When it comes to the restaurant industry.
Thank you, Chris. Yes, I have an open door policy, and I'd like to, you know, share my expertise with you or advice I can give you. So you're free to contact me. Best way to get me is my email, which is Steve, Steve, at Restaurant Realty. That's Restaurant Realty, Realty.com. And I'll give you my cell phone number too. You're free to call me. I'm available daily. 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. It's 415-720-5468. And you can go to Amazon to purchase my book either on Kindle or a hard copy. It's Restaurant Deal Maker, an insider's trade secrets to buying a restaurant, bar, or club. And I'm always a big proponent of sharing my expertise. And so feel free to contact me. And Chris, thank you for the opportunity.
Now, Steve, thank you so much for all that you shared with us today, and continued success to you and your company, and being able to help people through these times, and then when things get better, being able to help them exit their business also. But thank you so much again. We appreciate everything you shared with us and our audience today.
Best to you as well. Thank you.
Take care. Well, want to thank everybody for listening to today's episode of IBBA Insights. It's the official podcast from the International Business Brokers Association. We're happy to bring it to you. Again, we've mentioned many times it's a labor of love. It's great information out there, not only for the business intermediary, business broker, business professional, someone looking to buy a business, or someone looking to own a business. So for more information about IBBA Insights podcast or to listen to more episodes, go to IBBA.com/insights. I appreciate all of you that listen and support the show by sharing it on your social media platforms. Until the next episode, be happy, be safe, and do something nice for someone today. I'm Chris Diglio. Look forward to speaking with you again on the next episode of IBBA Insights.